Training camp's been worth the wait, and so is the Texans collective. Everything from the first week that you've got to know when it comes to Houston Texans training camp is coming your way right now on the Texans Collective.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in on a Wednesday night edition of the Texans Collective, our first ever Wednesday show. Why are we on a Wednesday? Well, because we're going to be doing two of these every week from now through the end of what we hope is a Super Bowl victory come February. We're going to be doing these twice a week, our regular Monday slot at 6 p.m., and then we're going to be doing them on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. as well. One thing that will be changing with the Wednesday one next week is that Landry will be on here, we assume, with us, as well as all the Monday ones. Technical issues have prevented Landry Locker from jumping on with us tonight. Nothing he did wrong or anything, just some technical StreamYard issues.
So, do we know that if that's the case? Do we know?
I don't want to throw Landry under the bus, so I'm just trying to be a good friend.
Protect the show.
Reggie. Put your phone away.
Protect the show.
Yeah, protect the show. So, Landry, but I would like to mention Landry will have a 10:30 stream tonight for the locker room. So if you guys are regular listeners or streamers, watchers of Landry's YouTube show, there will be a 10:30 show tonight. So you've got me, you've got Reggie Atatula, of course, of In the Loop, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Sports Radio 610. I, of course, am Sean Pendergast, Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. Soon to be 95.7 The Fan. And then Cody Stutes, of course, of Houston Football, with Cody Stutes and one half of SNL with Landry Locker. Gentlemen, we are a week into training camp now. We get a day off tomorrow, so this is kind of a fortunate we're coming on here, because tomorrow's sort of a day to breathe and take everything in. We've had seven practices so far, and the last three have been in pads, been pretty spirited, and I think much more even than they were last year. I will say that in terms of offense and defense, I still think this is a team that if you went to the training camp practices, you would say the defense is going to be the linchpin of this team. But I don't think the offense looks like the boat anchor that it did this time a year ago. But there's a lot we can dig into there, gentlemen. So camp 1 week in, I guess, what are the general thoughts here before we dig into some more specifics?
I've been very impressed with how the offense has kind of handled some of this stuff. And I've been impressed by the offensive line, specifically Keelan Rutledge. And I'm to the point here where it would be pretty shocking to me if Keelan Rutledge is not the starting center for the Houston Texans when they take the field against the Buffalo Bills. That's how good he's been in 3 days of pads and three other practices. Of course, they had one walkthrough mixed in there over the course of this week of work. So, you know, it's been impressive. I really like what I've seen from him. I like how the offensive line like is headed down a path. And then, of course, the defense has been really, really good. But I think the focus of training camp was, what is this offense going to be? Will they be able to take some of the haymakers that the defense throws at them? And will you see some progress? Not just, hey, it's the second year progress, but like actual progress. And I would say thumbs up on that for me when it comes to this offense and the Texans through a week.
And Cody, to that end, I think early on you were probably the one who was banging the drum on, hey, I want to make sure that Keelan Rutledge can actually do the snapping of the football. And anything to that regard from your perspective? Like, it looks like it's been clean operation to me.
I've seen one inaccurate shotgun snap, and I've seen one under center snap that didn't go that way. But, hell, I saw an inaccurate snap from Jake Andrews today in shotgun. So, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world. You could, you know, let's call it 100 snaps. You could live with two. And certainly thinking, you know, the big thing is does he make that same mistake again? It's been two different plays. They haven't replicated. Big two thumbs up for me on Keelan Rutledge so far. Mm.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason why is if we ever find ourselves where C.J. Stroud and Davis Mills and Graham Mertz can't take a snap under center, it sounds like Keelan Rutledge's wife can, because that's apparently who he snapped the football to a whole bunch to help him get that process right. And you can see it. As you mentioned, there was only one time it went wrong. I think when it comes to camp week one, if we're not going to talk about the offensive line, which I think, Cody, you made a great point, I would like to talk about a dude who seems like he can actually give you another like man beater on this offense, because that's something that they clearly need, and that's Jaden Higgins. He has looked really good. I think you can see the offseason work that he's done in that D'Amico Ryans in his, was it opening press conference, where he was like, yo, Jaden Higgins, like, really fast, really physical. And I was like, all right, you doing a lot. Then I saw him out here and I was like, damn, that dude is really fast, really physical. Like, it shows up. I think there was, now it's one-on-ones. One-on-ones are built to beat defenses, right? It's built for the wide receiver to win. But he left Derek Stingley in his wake, right? And Derek Stingley ain't no slowpoke by any means. You can see it. I think I got to the point where I think that this is true, that if a defender does not get their hands on him, he's blowing by you. And I think that that's going to be incredibly necessary. And on top of the fact that it feels like he's found a decent connection with CJ Stroud, that hopefully they can continue to grow. If that's the case, we're talking about defenses coming into games going, oh, snap, there's a 6'4 guy on this side that I need to pay attention to. And now you're starting to get the early semblances of there's a 6'4 guy on this guy on this side that we have to pay attention to. And that can be huge for this offense.
Yeah, I think those are both great. Those are both on my list. Higgins has looked phenomenal. I think the way they've been handling Nico Collins, kind of slow playing with him here in camp, kind of giving him very, very much veteran treatment here in camp, I think has been a really good thing for Jaden Higgins, because it's allowed him and CJ that opportunity. I know Nico has taken some snaps and whatnot. He's not been a total non-participant, but Jaden Higgins has been out there the entire time. And I think it's been really beneficial for those two working that connection. As far as Keelan Rutledge goes, that's been a home run so far, I think. I know it's early, but that's been a home run. And Reggie, we should mention that we know that he's been snapping to his wife, because you had Keelan Rutledge on In the Loop on Sports Radio 610. That was a great interview that you guys did with him the other day. I think the other thing, too, just with Keelan Rutledge, and again, it's early, so I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but this would be, if it works out, this would be two in a row for Nick Caserio now on drafting the offensive line. You know, after the disaster that was Kenyon Green in the first round, Juice Scruggs in the second round, and Blake Fisher in the second round, and obviously the book has not been closed totally on Blake Fisher yet, but I think we can see which way the wind's blowing. I mean, he's going to struggle to make this team probably, but Arianti Urshery looks like the real deal at left tackle early on here, and Keelan Rutledge looks like the real deal. And I think some of it may just be drafting the attitude in these guys to go with the skill set. Like, these are two guys that are just all about the work. They're, you know, to use an overused Laramie Tunsil word, they are both dogs. I think if Laramie were still around and said they were dogs, I would agree with him on that. So, yeah, I love what I've seen out of Rutledge. I'll throw the one in here that's had everybody talking for the last 48 hours, and that's the return of Jadeveon Clowney, and watching that out of practice today. Watching Clowney, imagining it is one thing, but then watching Clowney take some snaps today on the inside in a two-point stance, standing up over guards and centers, like he did at times under Romeo Crennel and Bill O'Brien here back when he was playing his best football as a Texan, is a scary thought. If I'm the other 14 teams that the Texans are going to play in the regular season this year, hearing about that out of camp, we know no film will leak of that because the Texans have turned have turned training camp into the Kremlin. But I understand it. But the Clowney thing, man, is just it hits every touch point for me. Not just functionally how he fits here, but just kind of emotionally and from a maturity standpoint, how he fits in now. It was a really interesting press conference with him a couple of days ago, yesterday, I guess it was, because in some ways he was everything the old Clowney was, and in some ways he was a completely different person than the old Clowney. You know what I mean? Like, same personality from a playfulness standpoint, just a good guy standpoint, but a completely different person in terms of the perspective that he had, which I thought in some ways, just hearing him talk, it sounded like that getting traded to Seattle, he handled that in a mature way, saying that, you know, that maybe this is a wake-up call for me, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, to kind of take a look in the mirror at some of the things that I need to do. And it's just interesting that the end result of that, or not end result, but the subsequent results of that have been him being this vagabond going around the NFL year to year, that there's never been any long-term commitment, but it seems to have worked for him. And for the first time in a long time, he's actually in a training camp. So we like that too.
I was pretty worried that nostalgia was going to carry a lot of the Clowney stuff. And I know he's better than Dominique Robinson and Dylan Horton and Ollie Gay and Solomon Burlick. I know he's better than those guys. And I know he's better than Derek Barnett, who was a name that we've brought up on the collective before, and we've talked about, hey, you know, he's not on the team. You could go get him. He's been on this team the past couple of years. I was worried there was going to be a nostalgia element. And then I watched him go out there and put Braden Smith in a blender. And I'm like, okay, nostalgia, yeah. Check. Still got it? Check. Yeah. Like, I really enjoyed seeing that from Clowney. And then, you know, the ability to move him around, put him on the field with those guys, the mentality that you mentioned too, Sean, like the dude never shows up for training camp and he's here in the first week of training camp. And we know Rod Wright and Frank Okham as the defensive line coaches and Matt Burke as the defensive coordinator, and especially the head coach, D'Amico Ryans, they're going to coach the hell out of this guy because mm-hmm. they coach the hell out of everybody.
Yeah.
And they're stuck. And you slack when Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter are doing things, it's going to show up. And it doesn't feel like – it feels like Clowney's not only in on let's learn this, he's in on, for lack of a better explanation, the swarm mentality that they not just desire but almost have as a prerequisite for players that they bring into the building. So I'm pretty excited about that. Is Rutledge and, like, the solidarity the biggest surprise for you guys through the first week?
Yeah, that's probably it, because I vividly remember in Keelan Rutledge's introductory press conference, him saying something to the effect of, yeah, I'm going to hold people accountable. I'm like, this is a rookie coming in and talking about people like this. Like, imagine you were training somebody your job, and they're like, I'm going to make sure everybody's doing it right. And you're just like, dog, you don't even know how to do your job right now. Talk about telling other people. And you see it. Like, he's literally seeing a poor rep bringing everybody together like, no, this ain't the standard. Like, he actually is this, right? We kind of – sometimes it can feel like the narrative things that we do are simply that. They're just narrative things. They're cute. They're things to talk about. Nah, man, when we talk about changing the culture on that offensive line, Arian Tayorsery felt like some of it. Nah, this is a notable shift in there is leader guy, and he is at the position where you want leader guy to be at center. Like, that feels like that's going to be meaningful for this offensive line, because I wanted to say a word that I don't know if I'm supposed to say. But I know that we don't have any, so I'm just going to say it and we'll see if I get in trouble. Ain't no pussyfooting around out here. You feel me? Like, everybody, you got to be on the standard. And that's always been, the standard has always been the thing that they said. I believe it on the offensive line now.
Yeah, the Rutledge thing is really interesting. You know, we had Casario on the show a couple of days ago, and at the very beginning of the interview, we talked about Rutledge. It's so interesting to hear this regime, D'Amico and Casario both, but especially D'Amico, talk about the rookies the way that they do. Just talk about them openly and give honest assessments. Bill O'Brien's been on our subconscious the last 48 hours because of Clowney. And it's really been interesting to hear D'Amico talk about Rutledge and talk about even a guy like Lewis Bond, even a guy like Colin Wright, who's an undrafted guy, not be afraid to give these guys praise because they're worthy of praise, or at least some of the things they're doing are worthy of praise. I think when it comes to Rutledge, it's really interesting, like, the everything he was doing, like in OT, not in OTAs, but in the early practices in training camp, finishing all the blocks and everything 20 yards down the field, which is stuff we hadn't seen a lot of Texans offensive linemen do. The fact of the matter is, there is kind of a leadership vacuum in that room. You know, the guys that are probably considered veteran leaders are guys that are new to this team. So it's not like they've got a ton of sweat equity in that locker room yet. Guys like Braden Smith, guys like Wyatt Teller. You know, Ed Ingram is a guy who's been here a year, but I don't know that Ed Ingram pops as a guy who's this extroverted leader. The only offensive lineman that's been a captain since D'Amico Ryans got here was Laremy Tunsil, and they shipped his ass out last year because, I think, in part because of leadership issues. So in some ways, a guy like Keelan Rutledge, who has one setting on his switch, is the perfect guy to bring in here if you're looking for a young guy. Alongside Ursary, who is also, I can't think, kind of wired the same way, but I don't think has established himself as, you know, as a extroverted leader on the offensive line. I, in some ways, it lines up perfectly, honestly. I don't think he will get this distinction as a rookie just because of the way the NFL works. But at some point, that dude's going to be one of the captains of the team. I'm pretty confident in that. If it's not this season, then it's going to be next season, and certainly by the third season. So I think he's stepping into a great situation, not only in terms of the opportunity, because if it doesn't work out at center, there's two guard positions that he will be very competitive at. But I think in terms of the way he's wired to be a tone setter, this is an offensive line room that is in need of tone setters.
Agreed. Yeah. And one of the best five, I mean, absolutely. If he's not the center, he's a guard. If he's not the guard, he's the starting center.
Yeah.
And if I was Wyatt Teller or I was Ed Ingram, I know they got big fat contracts. Look over your shoulder, because if he's not snapping the ball, he's coming for you.
Yes. And that's a great thing to be able to say, right? For a dude like Wyatt Teller, Ettinger maybe not in the same way, but for a dude like Wyatt Teller, in the NFL, especially at offensive line where there's such a scarcity, it's rare that a dude like that's like, hey, I have to watch for my job or somebody's going to come get it. That is the iron sharpens iron. That is the next man up mentality. That's the competition that they talk about.
Yep. It's also hilarious that a lot of the draft prognosticators predicted that Keith Rutledge would be the next Wyatt Teller. Turns out he's just going to be super Jake Andrews.
Super duper, hopefully, Jake Andrews.
Super duper, yeah.
Yes.
Or, you know, maybe he'll just be, I don't know, Creed Humphrey. Well, he was pretty good as a rookie.
We would take that in a heartbeat, in a heartbeat. All right, before we get to the next topic, not so fast, .. Cody, I'm going to let you set that up because that's one you put in there. Let's talk about Prize Picks with the people.
Let's do it. Prize Picks is the best and easiest way to play daily fantasy. You're making predictions, more or less, on given stats, like, I don't know, pitcher outs or two-pointers made or hits allowed. And all you got to do is, if you flex play, win 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 4. And if you play your first $5 and win, you get $150 in bonus lineups. And if you followed the collective last week for your first one, you would have got the W.
The $150.
You would have got the $150 in bonus lineups added to your account because everybody took care of business except for Cody. But that's okay. We had the flex play.
Yeah, we flexed.
3 out of 4, 2 out of 3. Or, hey, maybe you're really sure about two predictions. Just put two together. Win that first $5 entry. You get $150 in bonus lineups. Gentlemen, shall we throw one together for the folks here?
Yes. Can I go first? Because I just realized we started late. I just realized mine goes off in like 3 minutes.
Go for it. What do you got, Sean?
I want to go right there. Paul Skenes. Oh, not that one, though. Paul Skenes, less than 17 and a half outs recorded.
Okay.
Oh.
Yes.
He has less than on Skenes. Quickly, Reggie.
I'm actually going real sicko behavior. I want to go to the Canadian Open with Daniil Medvedev. He's facing, I don't know how to say old boy's name. I'm going to be completely honest.
Reggie's my favorite Prize Picks player ever.
That's right.
Spell it quick.
D-A-N-I-I-L. And then you should be able to pick up Medvedev from there. I want total games. I want less than 21 and a half total games. Medvedev is going to make quick work of old boy.
Medvedev?
M-E-D-V-E-D-E-V.
M-E-D. Come on now. Good Lord, Reggie. What have you got me? You said
tennis.
Oh, this is tennis.
Tennis.
Yes, yes.
Oh, jeez. Medvedev. Reggie, what have you done to me?
I don't know, man.
What is it? Say it again.
D-A-N-I-I-L.
No,
last
the
name?
M-E-D. No, the pick.
Less than 21 and a half total games.
Okay. Total games.
That's right.
Stop me when you see him. Jesus.
Reggie didn't even know what he looks like.
Reggie doesn't know what he looks like. Oh, I'm sure that I'm glad there's 1,000 tennis players here today.
Is it gone now?
He's
is
gone.
No. Damn, Reggie. Right. I'm going to lose my Skenes here, too. I'm going to have to go find another one.
I had this pick ready to go. I did.
Disaster. Okay, look. Here's what we're going to do.
Hey, everybody. It's way easier to play than it looks like right now. Okay.
NFL preseason. Skenes.
Beck. Oh, yes.
Let's go. Flex. Well, you can't flex play. It's only 2 entries. Reggie, you lost out. 2-person. We got Skenes in here. We got Beck in here. There's the entry for
what does Beck have to do?
Look, it still says there's 30 minutes. There's 30 minutes till this game starts, so it's not my fault.
Maybe don't pick tennis next time. More than 97 and a half pass yards. That's how easy it is on Prize Picks as the technical difficulties fucking continue here today on the Texans Collective. HMA is the code. Sign up, play your first $5. It's way easier to put in a lineup than we made it look. Win and get $150 in bonus lineups instantly added to your.
It's super easy if you don't wait till the last minute like we did.
Yeah.
All right. So, do it. And if you had followed us last week, like Cody said, you'd be $150 Prize Picks dollars richer in your account. Code HMA. All right. Let's keep it moving. For those of you just tuning in, it's just the three of us. Landry, technical issues with his feed. So, but I want to mention again, his 10:30. Locker room stream will be going tonight. So if you're a regular viewer of Landry Locker, you will get Landry Locker tonight at 10:30 on the locker room with Landry Locker. All right, Cody, I'm going to let you take the lead on this one. Not so fast, ..
This can go a variety of ways. This is a shout out to old Lee Corso. Not so fast, my friend. Yeah. Maybe it is a thought that you believed was going to be ever present in training camp? Maybe it's a prediction you had that has drastically changed. What is something that has been vastly different than your expectation here through the first week of Texans training camp?
I can start with this.
Go for it, Reggie.
The improvement of the run game. Haven't seen it yet, big dog. Like, I have not seen them be the road graders that would have been intimated by the size that they brought in. Now, it is better, right? There's been give and take, and there's been instances where, at the very least, it is not just guys getting touched in the backfield nearly as much, right? There's instances where they're getting to the line of scrimmage, maybe getting a few more, but you're not seeing those holes open up in Canyon's form for Woody Marks and David Montgomery to run through nearly as frequently as one might hope early on. That being said, right, yeah, like, I that was the whole statement. Like, the whole statement was, hey, man, we're going to run the football. And they got pads on, and I was like, okay, they're trying to run the football, sure. Have they found, like, an amount of success that feels like it would match with the way that they've talked about this? Not yet. Not so fast.
Okay. Cody, I know you have certain feelings. Oh, go ahead.
I have quite, like, it does feel like it's a little bit better. It's not awesome. Because I agree with you, Reggie. I have not seen, like, they're not some, you know, amazing offensive rushing attack. But it does feel and at times look a little bit better than last year, which we could simply have said that was going to happen because David Montgomery is the running back and not Nick Chubb. But, like, I have seen some moments where it looks like the O-line did some good jobs. I have seen some moments from depth running backs. Like, you're not saying they're screwed. You're just saying you haven't seen this big jump.
No, because here's the thing, right? We were, what are we talking about, 29th last year in rushing the football, and they went pretty big on trying to make sure that this run game is better. I have not seen pretty big results yet back from it. It's really a return on an investment conversation more than just an improvement conversation. They're in a place where they're starting at a spot, and I can see where the progression can be. I can see the development getting to a place where we'd be satisfactory with. But you have not seen that jump happen early enough. And it's always fair to acknowledge that the defense you're going against is not going to make it easy for those results to show up. However, I think if we were just in an abstract, in a vacuum, and we're just like, hey, you did all of this to make sure your run was better. You talked about it. You're getting out here in 13 personnel with multiple tight ends, and you actually have those tight ends. What are the results? I think that everybody would have expected more than what we've seen to this point.
They've at least had a few runs that look like runs that good running teams have. They had none of those last year. You know what I mean? Like, they've at least had a few, like, oh, I see what they were doing there. They were pulling a guard, and the guy followed him through the hole, and Woody Marks got 11 yards for you or whatever it is. You know, like, they had none of those last year, it felt like every run was just running into a brick wall.
I appreciate that y'all trying to bring some positivity here, but it feels like y'all having poverty mindsets over here.
Yeah,
it smells like broken here. I want good running game, not better running game.
We've been traumatized. You've only been here 2 years. We've been through 5 years of this shit, man. Since
I will say,
they'll get you too, Reggie.
I have the same expectations that Reggie does for the rushing attack.
For sure.
I have seen the breadcrumb trail to, you know, the restaurant. Where it is good. It is good eating.
Okay.
You know, I have seen the breadcrumb trail. Yeah. Now, the trail is maybe longer than I want it to be. And we thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. But I can see the vision. I can see where it works.
I love this metaphor so much.
Because a year ago, I showed up every day and I was like, I don't know how they're going to run the football with Nick Chubb. Like, I don't know how they're going to do it. And like, you know, I think foolishly, I thought Lakin Tomlinson was going to be a big, solid professional. And I guess he was a professional in the way that he handled his exit before the season was over and rotating at left guard. But, like, I could see the vision at running back and the rushing attack that they're just not there yet. They're not there yet.
Yeah. Okay. I think I've got a couple. One, Cody, I think is one that I know you and Landry both feel a certain kind of way about. And Reggie, I'm not sure if you do or not. I just know that I stand next to Cody oftentimes when he's got his stopwatch out and he's hang time. I had dismissed as being a major thing the fact that they let Tommy Townsend walk. And I'm like, oh, a lot of teams do this. So they bring in a journeyman punter. I know Kai Kroger's not a journeyman, really. He's a young guy. And they bring in a guy from college, and then they find a guy who they, you know, and you got him on a nice cheap salary for a few years. I think it's going to be just fine. Not so fast, my friends. If it's one of these two guys, it's not going to be fine. to the point where it'll be demoralizing if they lose a game early on this year because they've had bad special teams play, you know, bad punting specifically. You know, I completely trust Kaimi Fairbairn. I completely trust whoever they, you know, whoever Frank Ross puts out there on the coverage units. I think Woody Marks has been fun to watch return kicks in this camp. I think he's got some juice. So overall, I feel great about the special teams other than these two punters are not good. At least if they are good, they haven't shown it yet in training camp. So I was a little dismissive of that when they moved on from Tommy Townsend. Not so fast, Sean. You should have been a little bit more cognizant of what they were doing there.
Well, I thought for sure one of these guys would be good enough. And
good enough is a good way to put it. Yeah.
And it's they're not. And I, you know, maybe they're game punters. Well, Kai Kroger's got a year of game punting and it didn't look very good.
No.
You know, Stonehouse is a rookie. And so I thought it would look better. There were a couple of moments in minicamp OTAs where I thought Stonehouse looked decent. He did not look good. They basically swapped off days. It was a Kroger day earlier this week, and the next day was a Stonehouse day, and it all remarkably looked the same, which was not good enough. And it does beg the question, why are you one of six teams in the National Football League that has a punter competition when you punted the third or fourth most in the NFL last year?
Oh, I didn't know that stat. Oh,
it looks like the punter competition grows because it sounds like they're working out another punter, Jack Browning, tomorrow.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Aaron Wilson reporting that one. Yeah.
At the very least, I've told you guys this before,
well,
and
that,
I know.
By the way, sorry, Reggie. That shows you how they feel about these punters, right?
Exactly.
Now.
Right. That's exactly where I was getting to. I've told you guys this before. I don't know if it really should mean much, but I at the very least appreciate the fact that when we can see sometimes they do something that shows us they can also see it, right? Yeah. And when we're looking at this and going, hey, the punt team sucks. Clearly, they're like, let's see. Can we go check the UFL and see if there's anything? Like, let's check the clearance racks and see if we can find something. Because that's what we felt about defensive end. And they were like, yeah, no, we see it too. Let's bring in Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Jack Browning's not Jadeveon Clowney, but you get the point. At least they're churning the roster to see if they can find a punter worth the damn.
Yep.
I might save this clip because I might sound like a stupid idiot here in a few weeks. Like, there's time for one of these two punters to turn it around and like win the job and like put together a few days in a row. And it's like, oh, okay. Like we're comfortable enough, but like, I think we're all going to kind of be sitting there just like, you know, oh, what the hell happened? Like if a punter screws it up in the first 3 weeks and it's like the margin for error in the first month of the season is not there. Like you paid three really good teams in the Colts.
Yeah. Well, the killer would be if one of these guys, because whoever it is going to be the holder also, that if they botch something there that's costing you points.
God forbid. You
know, God forbid, right. And so that is – it sounds – I won't say weird to say this. Probably maybe more so it sounds foreign for us to say this because we haven't discussed a punter battle in God knows how long. That truly is one position where I'm almost like, I just want to see what it looks like when the game gets here, you know, when they're playing, who do they play? The Chargers next Thursday.
That is correct.
That is one position where like the game environment, the intensity with which all those tryhards that are trying to make the team are going to be coming after those guys, you know, trying to block a punt and make the team. So that's really one, not that guys aren't trying hard in Texans practice, but obviously in a game situation, there aren't the same restrictions and things like that you operate with in practice. So that punter thing is, and I'll be anxious to see, like, does one guy get the first half and the other guy get the second half? Will this Browning kid have gotten one of the two guys that are in there right now, each, you know, cut? It's as interested as I've ever been in the position of punter on the Houston Texans.
Can we do a punter royale rumble?
Yes.
Right, where we just have them and then here comes Jack Browning and then Thomas Morstead can run in. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to have all of them come in here and punt.
Oh, yeah. Now you're talking.
Tommy Townsend makes like no money. It's like, I don't know why we didn't just see them run it back with him. So I'll say one more thing about the not so fast.
Yeah.
I did not expect CJ Stroud to come in and stay level these first few days. Like he's come in. I feel like he has been extremely consistent. And the past few days, I would say, dealing with what he's had to deal with from a defense, he's going against perspective, he's been good the past 3 days. And it's bam, 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 day after day after day. And I can think back to training camps in the past couple of years where it's like, good day, boom. You know, or 2 bad days in a row, or that day wasn't really that. I feel like he's been sharp. He's been accurate. Him and Jaden Higgins have been on the same page, which is something you mentioned earlier, Sean, which is really important for the development of this team. I feel like his consistency is not something I expected, especially when this is – I know they had minicamp at OTAs. This is the first real football-type stuff that he's been doing since New England, and that looks like he's put that behind him. Now, obviously, the next challenge is games, and then it's the playoffs. So, yeah, we all understand that. But bam, 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 to come in here, handle his business day after day after day, when consistency has not always been the training camp hallmark for him, certainly over these past two seasons, that is not something I expected to see, and that's been a beautiful sight to see through the first week.
Yeah, no doubt. Even the day where the defense dominated the offense, you know, I know you wrote that up one day, Cody, that just the defense waylaid the offense. I think it was one of the padded days this week. Even on that day, CJ had some good moments.
Yep.
You know, he had some good throws in that practice. So, all right, before we get to talking about Tank Dell, who was in pads today, that was cool just to see him in pads and a helmet catching a football from CJ Stroud. It was fun seeing them do their little handshake and everything. I loved it. We'll get to that.
Was he a priest at Notre Dame? What was he?
CJ, that might be part of CJ's high five with some people. He's a man of faith. All right, let's get into SeatGeek before we get to that.
Yeah. SeatGeek is the way to get your tickets. Collective 10 is going to get you 10% off your tickets on SeatGeek. There's a link in the description down below. It'll autofill the code for you. They got everything at SeatGeek. If you're ready to watch the Texans this fall, but you're not sure exactly where you're sitting just yet, SeatGeek can take care of you. The number one sports ticketing app is here for you. Texans football, man. Look at all these different options. Maybe you want to start with the two-step of the Bills and Bengals coming to town with MVP caliber quarterbacks. Maybe later in the year you want to go see the Texans play the Chargers, or you want to go watch them play the Commanders, or maybe, just maybe, you're thinking Christmas Eve would be huge. Let's go watch them play the Eagles in Philadelphia. They got everything for you at SeatGeek, even the game that I really want to go watch on the road. That's the Green Bay Packers. Look at all these great seats at the legendary mecca that is Lambeau Field. SeatGeek has it all. Over 70,000 events, plays, and music shows, and just about any sport you can think of. And right now, Collective 10 is going to get you 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. It's 10% off any tickets with the promo code COLLECTIVE10. Make sure you click the link in the description, download the app, have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek, for 10% off when you use the code COLLECTIVE10. Collective 10, talk to multiple Texans fans. We're going to Lambeau. I said, get your tickets with SeatGeek. Collective 10, 10% off. Use the link in the description down below if you're watching right now.
Dude, just seeing those first few games, I'm so jacked for that first month of the season. Holy smokes.
I mean, it's you. No matter how you slice it, you get incredible opponents coming to town. You like opposing defenses, there's notable pieces of defenders up and down the lineup. You like running backs, 1,000-yard rushers through the first 4 weeks. You like quarterback play, 3 MVP candidates. Like, it's awesome.
Yep. Going to be a lot of fun.
One of the things I love about training camp is that we've had people dropping in, like, nationally. They're all excited. And then the first 4 weeks are going to be that on steroids at Reliant Stadium. It's just going to be everybody rubbernecking of sorts to see just what this looks like.
3 of the first 4 games at home, all against either marquee teams or marquee quarterbacks or both. You know, it's going to be a whole lot of fun. All right, so Tank Dell, pads on today, participated in a few drills. We had Nick Caserio on Payne and Pendergast on Tuesday morning. And he's been pretty forthcoming on our show, going back several months, going back to the Super Bowl when we asked him about Tank, going back to June 3rd when he was on with us, the last appearance he had before training camp back in early June. He had said on that appearance that we expect Tank to be ready to do stuff at training camp. He has started doing stuff now at training camp. Here was, you got ready to go, Cody?
Yep.
Here was Nick Caserio on Payne and Pendergast yesterday when we asked him before practice, what's the latest with Tank Dell?
He's getting a little bit closer, making progress. We've done some things sort of like after practice individually, you know, ramp up wise. At some point, he'll graduate to going into more drills in practice. At some point, whenever that takes place, we're probably going to at least need to see him go out there in a game in some capacity,
yeah,
so that the first time he's playing isn't potentially in a regular season game. So we're just trying to be very measured, very smart. And we've talked about this. Each player is kind of their own entity, so we probably try to do what we think is best for each individual player. So Tank's worked really hard. You know, he's certainly made progress, and I think he's getting a little bit closer.
So that was Nick yesterday. Now, there was a follow-up question to that, too. That answer got me excited because you hear the word game, you know, and he's going to have to get into a game at some point. I'm like, oh, he's going to play in games? So I asked Nick as a follow-up to it, just, hey, does that mean he's going to play in a preseason game? And he kind of backed off a little bit and hedged and said, we'll see. So I'm more confused now, maybe more than anything else. I was just happy to see Tank out there today doing some things where he's running around. And you could tell, guys, even when he wasn't doing anything, he was trying to, like, even just going from, like, talking to one person to going over to talk to somebody else, he was, like, juking through the crowd of people to get over there. He wasn't walking. He was, I don't know if he's trying to show the people there that his legs work or if he's just antsy or anxious. We know that just all the stories that we hear from behind the scenes is that he has really been chomping at the bit to get back on the field. But where are you guys right now on the whole Tank Dell thing, especially after seeing him with your own eyes today out of practice?
Yeah, he participated in practice. I think if you just read a headline, you would think amazing news for Tank Dell. It felt pretty far away today to be out in pads. And I know it's a week after Caserio was at the podium before training camp started. He said a week or so, maybe a practice. And it's like, I don't consider today a practice. I consider him participating. But like a practice to me for Tank Dell would be stretch, and then it's team four on the board, and one has been out there. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm just doing the number crunching here, guys. Like, we're 7 days into training camp. Like it's the amount of opportunities are dwindling quickly. Like, we're over a third of the way through the practices, and that's not even factoring in that two of those are joint practices, and then, you know, you have the preseason games, but you don't even know if you can get him in a preseason game. Like, time is running out, and he's got to be healthy enough to be on the field, and then he's got to be healthy enough to stay on the field. Mm-hmm. And then he has to showcase enough that you feel confident he can help you more on a Sunday than someone else. And then he's got to take that person's roster spot. That's a lot in 3 weeks.
In a room that's a little deeper than I think we thought it was before camp, Lewis Bond is doing some things right now out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of bodies.
And I also think he slid it in there. This was not D'Amico Ryans' comments today about Tank, but when he previously talked about him, the comment was, I'm holding Tank back. And I'm paraphrasing here. So that when he gets on the field, he stays on the field. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's an element of the training staff's hesitation is, if we put you back too early, the risk that you are off again is higher. I think if it was up to Tank Dell, he'd have been there the first day of training camp, and I'll fight through it. I'll battle through it. I don't care if my leg hurts or this or that, but it's obviously not just up to him. I think if it was up to Tank Dell, he'd have been practicing already.
No, 100%. But I think that that's also something that we have to account for, right? And I think that you have a good, responsible perspective on it. And so here I come being irresponsible on the other side, if you don't mind. I think that there's something to be noted where one of the big breakthroughs is getting him on the field and for them to feel comfortable with him getting on the field. Beyond it from here, I think that the big things that you're doing and checking off are things that prove a level of confidence. Like, obviously, hey, what's the first time that how does he look the first time that he has to, like, catch a ball in traffic, right? How does he look the first time he has to take an actual hit? I think that those as measurements those don't feel like those are as far apart from each other as having the confidence for him to get out there and do stuff at all, right? And I think you're right. Doing individual drills is not the same as being in team or even as the same as one-on-ones where the possibilities of bumping knees or clashing ankles are. But I think that when you talk about, hey, some of the practices that we do have left of the almost two-thirds of the rest of the camp are joint practices, I say those are the game-type situations that you're hoping for. So I do think that those matter in what we're getting towards. And plus, when we talk about, okay, once you have to get all through that and you get the confidence and you're out there on the field, you also have to beat guys out. I think that there's a level of beating guys out that he's done, that is done by his name being Tank Dell, right? I was thinking about this just a little bit earlier when I got out of work and while I was eating my Chinese fried rice, was how many guys, how many guys on this team do you feel like are like diamond guys? And I'm making a thing up, so don't get on my case about it, but like guys that catch with their hands and really can make great grabs with their hands. Mm-hmm. How many of those do you have? Because I think it's a fairly short list and very quickly you find Tank Dell. And I wonder if like that isn't something that you think about when you're like, hey, I need a guy who can go up and make plays sometimes, especially if separation isn't going to be great outside of the likes of Nico Collins and outside of the likes of Jaden Higgins. You need guys that, hey, there might not be a lot of separation, but I can bring this thing down. The Tank has always demonstrated himself capable of doing that. So I'm taking more of a glass half full approach on the Tank Dell circumstances, especially seeing as we got him out there, and I think at this point, you can only hold him back so much with the energy and the eagerness he showed.
I think there's a lot of guys that if they were in this situation, the Texans would have just moved on from him. You know, that they would have just, you know, there's not, it takes a rare guy for you to go through a year and a half of what Tank's been going through with not knowing what the end looks like here, you know, what the end game is. And I think that speaks to, one, how good Tank looked when he was at his best. He was at his best. Honestly, like the last five games before he broke his leg his rookie year, he scored a touchdown in all those games. He was turning into something that rookie year. Second year is a little more up and down, but ironically, his best game, maybe his best play of that season was the one he got hurt on. He held the ball going to the ground on a play where his knee got torn in 50 different places. So, A, he's a good player. B, he is beloved. And I think that matters with this regime, too, behind the scenes, that he is Tank Dell. Maybe it matters that he's friends with C.J. Stroud. Who knows? But I think it's also interesting they didn't put him on the PUP list to start training camp, because that is, in some ways, a bet on his health. You know, you get a little more flexibility roster-wise if they did put him on the PUP. I know it doesn't allow him to do things like he did today, which obviously they feel is important or he would have been doing it. But I think there is that. If you guys had to pick one of these scenarios for Tank, I think there's four scenarios here. He is healthy and active in week one. He is on the roster in week one, but he is inactive. He is on some sort of injury designation heading into week one. Or he's not on the Texans anymore.
Three.
Number three?
Number three.
He's on the team. He's a Houston Texan, but he's got some sort of injury designation.
I do not believe Tank Dell gets out of this building in 2026.
Okay.
I don't believe that. Even if he has to spend a whole year on IR, I don't believe Tank Dell's leaving the building in 2026.
Yeah.
I can't for sure tell you today he's going to play football, but I don't believe he's leaving the building. So I don't think D feels wholly unrealistic to me. Because if he is not healthy enough to play, IR him for the year. He's a vibes guy. You like him. See if there's a chance in week 10, week 12, whatever it is. Like you, Justin Watson could go out there in week 6 and he could get hurt. And then it's like, well, hey, Tank's been working. Tank's been in meetings. Whatever. Like a just in case. But you have, I think it is inherent that you have to see things on the football field and you have to see them constantly before he's taking someone's roster spot away from a Sunday and helping you on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I will, again, be on the more optimistic side here. I'm going to. I think that he's on the roster, just not active in week one. I mean, as you mentioned, one of the things is that they were willing to play. Now, of course, this is a lot lower stakes, but they were willing to play on this side of the fence when it came to training camp without him having an injury designation, as you mentioned. And then on top of that, it feels like, especially with the ways that the wide receiver room has shown early on in camp, it feels like there's also a level of versatility with all these guys that they have out here where I feel like they go, we can make do until we get the upside that we are presented with the idea of Tank Dell. Whether that's you look over at they're moving Jaden Higgins around, right? Obviously, Jalen being healthy would be huge in that regard. But Xavier Hutchinson is the guy that is the guy that they trust, and they trust him to do a lot of things on the field. Justin Watson is a guy that they trust, and they trust him to do a lot of things on the field. I do wonder if they just come in and, hey, we can move guys around and put them in pieces. Hell, Nico Collins, they're trying to move around more. Like, it's just we need guys that we can put in different places, and we can make it work some level of shell game with these guys until we get the unique talent that is Tank Dell. It seems very clear that's how they view him, and I think that they'd be willing to take that gamble.
It's just wild to me. This is where I get a little pessimistic. It's wild to me. That injury took place in early December 2024. So we're talking 13, what are we in, 8 months into it? I mean, we're 21 months into this thing with Tank. So you're telling me we've made it all this time 21 months, but really it's that 22nd month where he's really going to take that. You know what I mean? Like, I saw somebody sarcastically tweet this when Caserio talked about, when he did his press conference last week, and he said maybe a week or whatever, a week or so before we, you know, see what Tank can do. And I saw somebody sarcastically tweet, yeah, 20 months, man, this has been a grind. And it's, boy, it's taken a while to get here. 20 months and 2 weeks. That's what's going to be the difference in this whole thing. You know, it is. Are we beyond the pale now where it's just wishful thinking? I have no idea. Not a doctor. And they're certainly not sharing any of Tank's medical information. I've never experienced anything like this with such a popular Houston Texan before.
I mean, Brevin Jordan's getting opportunities, and he's shown way less than what Tank Dell has shown.
Yep.
So if you believe there to be a 0.01% chance that I can find 2023 Tank Dell post-injury, then it's not bad business to try to find out.
Sure.
Like that is my biggest thing. Take as long as it takes to find out and make a full, honest decision about Tank Dell. Just don't make any decisions that affect your ability to maximize Sunday in the first month, 6 weeks, 8 weeks of the season.
Yep.
No, I feel that. The thing, I know you guys both like crossing borders to go and play a little cards. Like, what you're pointing to is a sunk cost fallacy, right? You've put in so many months, and is it to? I think that both of y'all are in a place where people are betting crazy before we even see cards. You're like, at least let me see the flop, right? And I think that's where we are. At least let me see the flop on Tank Dell, right? Yep. I think that's what I want to have.
Good way to put it. So we'll have eyes on it over the weekend here. Hopefully we see Tank out there in pads again. Maybe we see him doing some more stuff. Who knows? But we'll all have eyes on it for everybody.
If I could create a Prize Picks prediction for you to make, like what number would you go more on if I said Tank Dell's going to practice in 3.5 training camp practices? Are you going more on that?
Like when you say practice, you mean like really
start
practice.
To finish.
Yeah.
Start to finish.
I would go more than that.
Okay. 6.5.
We're almost into the second preseason game at that point.
Because we have 12 goals,
feels
right?
Like 6.5 feels like a good number. I'd still go more just because I'm not super optimistic about it. It's gone on so long. I'd probably stay away from it, Cody. I think 6.5 is a better number. 3.5 just feels too short because he did hardly anything today. You know what I mean? Like it's the they're off today. They practice Friday, Saturday. I think they're off Sunday, and then they practice again Monday and Tuesday. So we're talking like over 3.5 means he's doing everything next Tuesday. And I just don't feel like that's the case. Whereas 6.5, now you're into the week leading up to the Raider game. And maybe he's worked back in. Nick said maybe he gets into a preseason game. I'd rather have him out there in a preseason game in the second one when there's, like, just honestly, like, when there's not a bunch of maniacs out there trying to make the team
in the third
preseason game, you know?
Sure. I also would say, like, I know he said preseason game. They treat those joint practices like preseason games.
Yes.
So, like, if he did a joint practice instead of a preseason game, like, that would count for me.
Okay, that's a good one. Okay, so how many you don't need to look this up, but I'm just talking about in setting the number. I would set the number at whatever makes the Raiders joint practice the over. You know,
yeah,
what
so
I
that's
mean?
That's 8 practices and 1 preseason game away.
Okay, I'd set it at 7.5 practices then. and make that Raiders, you know, that he gets in there maybe against the Raiders.
Okay.
But none of us have any idea. We're just flying blind right now.
Yeah. We do have a super chat, Sean, I want to get to.
Cool.
Hack-a-Shack says, can we expect a Sean Pinder guest appearance at like Spanky's on August 14th?
I think so. I do believe August 14th is going to be good for me. I'm looking right now, August 14th. It'll be a late night the night before because of the post game show for the Chargers game. Yes, tentatively schedule me for that.
All right, there we go. Yep. Love to see it.
Yeah, man. Pender guest. I like that.
Pender guest, yeah. If you have super chats, you can, of course, send those in. They'll jump to the front of the line, and I guess we have the remaining battles, Shawnee.
Yeah, let's do it. So let's go through this here. Remaining battles that the three of us are most looking forward to. You can start to see the back end of some of these position groups maybe taking shape here over the next several practices. Cody, what about you? We'll start with you. What's the biggest position battle or two that you're looking at right now?
I'm so intrigued by this right tackle war. I mean, it's not a battle. It's a war. Because both these guys have something to offer at right tackle. Like, this is not Rutledge versus Andrews where people overwhelmingly desire one outcome versus the other. Like,
yeah.
I truly believe that the right tackle spot is going to be this guy just had a few better days than you. And Landry and I talked to Trent Brown this week. The interview drops tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. on our channel.
Mm-hmm.
He was awesome on Braden Smith coming in, what he expects, working with Braden Smith to get everybody better. Like, I think it was a great part of the conversation. And the loser's going to have to go watch a guy who's pretty well versed in keeping his job. Like, Trent Brown's gotten a bunch of jobs and kept them. He got a job last year and kept it through a winning streak.
Yeah, Trent Brown has not lost a game as a Texan yet.
Yeah, and then like Braden Smith came in, played a new position, and never gave the spot up until the Colts moved on from him. So it's like those guys are used to getting entrenched in their spot, and they're in a fight. And Braden Smith was unimpressive before the pads came on. He's been more impressive since the pads come on. It's very hard to judge those guys because Daniil Hunter and Will Anderson are whipping up on them every time. And it's like, I don't want to discount it, but I don't want to put too much stock in it. But then, you know, hey, inevitably somebody goes out there instead of the other guy. And it's like, well, it's Dylan Horton. It's like, you got to beat Dylan Horton.
Yeah.
Like, you got to beat Dominique Robinson. You got to beat Ollie Gay. Clowney's a different story. Braden Smith learned that one today. Like, but it's – I think that is just such a fascinating battle because Trent Brown's the coach's favorite. They love him. I think the room loves him. He's kind of the guy who's done it all. He's won. He's been the highest paid. He's been hurt. You know, he's been cut. He's been traded. Like, he's seen it all, done it all. And, like, he just kind of – he wants the best, and it's like he thinks he's the best. Braden Smith thinks he's the best. Cool. Figure it out, guys. Let's go to war.
That's a good one. What about you, Reggie?
The only thing that takes a little edge off of that particular war, as you said, is that I feel like we're going to see both of them anyways. But, yes,
sure.
100%. I'll take the other one on offense here because there's a couple on defense that actually intrigue me as well. But it's the back end of the tight end room. Because obviously we've talked about, we don't even know how many they'll have, but Marlon Klein's starting to show a little bit of something here, making some plays. That is always just interesting, but I think we all agree that we feel he'll be on the roster. Cade Stover has looked better than he did before, right? To what degree, I think, is a question that's asked. And Brevin Jordan, you're seeing the ways in which he shows up for this team, but also within the context of what they're trying to do here, right? It's not just, you know, Brevin Jordan is, you know, a glorified slot receiver. He's getting in line. He's showing a willingness to block. And then he's also making some grabs that are, you know, things that you could probably look around that tight end room and go, not everybody in this room makes it. And so I really like what's happening at the back end of that tight end room because this feels like it's kind of a linchpin for the offense in general, which I guess to bring it back to the first topic that we had, camp 1 week in, I appreciate that they have not just paid lip service to having more in their canon offensively. You're seeing the ways in which they're doing a lot more things, and I think that ties into the idea of having all these tight ends in here. And so which one of these guys will actually ply their trade for this team when they get to Sundays, I think is very interesting.
That's a good one. I had tight end written down, and I said that last week, I think on this stream, that position group's the most intriguing one because there will be a guy who at one point or another, the front office and coaching staff have really elevated in terms of what they think of them. And Brevin Jordan and Cade Stover, one of those two guys will not be a Houston Texan. Whether they find a trade partner to do one of these little this guy in a sixth for a fifth kind of thing, or whether they have to cut him and bring him back on the practice squad, they will not be on the 53, one of those two guys, barring injury. Marlon Klein was almost my not so fast, because my not so fast with Marlon Klein was going to be like, well, he's a project. I think he's going to make the team just because they used the 59th overall pick on him. My not so fast was going to be what you just said, Reggie. He's flashed at times in this camp so far.
Landry makes fun of me. I know that shocks you, but I award the best route that didn't get the football in practice sometimes. Marlon Klein has won that award three times.
Yep.
He ran the best route that didn't get the football.
Yeah.
Now, I've only handed the award out three times, but Marlon Klein has won it all three times. And today he had the one-handed catch over Merriweather.
On the one-on-ones.
Yeah, the one-on-ones. You could see him attacking things in the run game. His receiving prowess that seems to be present hurts Brevin Jordan's case.
Yes.
Because Stover's the guy that's supposed to block well, not as adept as a receiver, everything on special teams. So that hurts Brevin a little bit if Klein continues to receive well. And then we know Dalton and Moreau are adequate pass catchers as well.
Yep. Yeah, since you use tight ends, Reggie, I'll use the back of the wide receiver room. We talked about it a little bit, but there's so much mystery going on with that room right now. You know, we know Nico's the linchpin. Jaden Higgins looks like he's heading in that direction where these are your two starting wide receivers, and you got a pair of big, strong guys, but also that have some explosiveness. Jalen Noel hasn't gotten on the field yet, but we know he's one of those guys that I think is inside the velvet rope right now in that room. I think Xavier Hutchinson is too. He's done some good things this camp. They seem to really like him. He's in the last year of his deal. So there's four guys. And then the Tank Dell thing is just such a mystery as to what that's going to be. So you've got that. Add in that Justin Watson is sort of this solid vet who's made a few plays here and there in camp. And then Lewis Bond injects this total variable into this thing where I think most people looked at a sixth-round pick and go, well, you know, he'll get a chance to flash some things with the threes or the twos or whoever. They'll cut him. Nobody will pick him up, and then they'll bring him back. And that may very well be what happens with them. I don't see them keeping seven wide receivers, although they did a couple years ago. But the thing with that was the seventh one. Oh, what's the name of that guy that returned the kick in the Ravens playoffs?
Sims.
I knew it was two S's. They kept him, but that was kind of, he was sort of, you knew what he was. He was a return specialist. I don't know that one of the, you know, Jalen Noel returns kicks, but he's not a guy you're keeping as the seventh wide receiver. He's also going to hopefully get 30 or 40 snaps a game actually at wide receiver. So that room's really interesting to me. Lewis Bond and some of the things he's done, both in training camp and really OTAs and minicamp, I thought he did some good things too. That makes that those decisions in that room interesting to me.
Yeah, and the crazy thing about Lewis Bond is I'm already in a place where I'm wondering, is, you know, when you're trying to figure out 53, who are the guys you can slide to practice squad? I'm wondering, could he even make it to practice squad with what he's shown to this point?
Look, I like Lewis Bond. There's 32 Lewis Bonds right now. Everybody has a Lewis Bond in training camp right now.
True.
So I'm not worried about Lewis Bond sneaking, like getting, grabbed off waivers. All 32 teams make 40 plus cuts at the same time.
I just bought a Lewis Bond jersey, you asshole.
Well, don't worry about it. He'll be around. And I think also it's worth noting is it's a good point, Cody, especially because his value is very particular to the system as well, right? It's not like you drop him in every system and then it works. Like his value is very particular here. So that's a great,
especially
point.
At that position, slot position. Yeah. So I think I brought this up before on this stream. I know I brought it up on the radio show. Cecil Shorts played 1 year in that system here in 2015. the slot in the Bill O'Brien New England system. And when I was doing the postgame show with him in 2017 or 2018, whatever it was, Cecil Shorts repeatedly said that the hardest position other than quarterback to play in that system is slot receiver. Because there's just, you're looking at as much pre-snap stuff as the quarterback is almost in terms of leverage and what route you're supposed to do, hots, things like that. So Lewis Bond has kind of at least had a sort of a crash course in that playing at Boston College for Bill O'Brien.
Landry and I talked to Lewis Bond, and I know this will shock you. He said he's watched quite a bit of Wes Welker and Julian Edelman in his time.
No way.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I would also mention before we get out of here, I do not know who linebacker three is for this team. Yeah. And because I don't know who three is, I also don't know who four, five, and six are either.
Yep.
So I think that is – I feel bad for Jake Hansen because I feel strongly he could be that guy if he had not hurt his ankle. So I would say – but it's not in a bad way that I feel that way about the linebackers. Like, I think they've got – the bodies, they just got to figure out who the bodies are.
Well, if you're trying to watch either out of training camp or at the joint practices, or if you're watching the preseason games and you're wondering who's got the inside track to make it at linebacker, don't just watch the defensive snaps. Watch the guys running down on kick coverage and things like that. That's where linebackers four, five, and six are going to make the team more likely than how they are in coverage or whatever. Yeah. You know,
one super chat before we get out of here, gentlemen, Spaz Attack, tell about Sopkowitz, Cody. I hadn't been a lot to tell, but today he had a nice little sideline catch that ripped it out of the air. It was good. It hadn't been much from my guy Sopkowitz.
That's your guy?
Well, there maybe have been some financial investments in Sopkowitz prior to his arrival in the National Football League. There might have been some Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights where he was the entertainment.
Oh, he's a favorite of yours. Oh, I see.
He was the entertainment.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Have you had a chance to tell him that yet?
No. Hey, I bet on you a bunch when you were
in. Yeah. The NFL loves. I think the NFL loves when you bring that up.
I think I'll avoid that conversation.
Probably so.
I feel like I'd be remiss if we ended this stream without mentioning a dude who just keeps flashing and not in no bad way. His name is Colin Wright. Where's 37 and White? That dude, he just every day he does a little bit of something, don't he? Like, to the point where I have to ask this as a question because, you know, I am prone to doing the thing. I think Landry does this from time to time as well, where you kind of get that guy and you're like, am I doing this? Am I doing too much here? Because it's good stuff. He could take Tre'Mont Smith's job, right?
Yes.
Why not?
He could.
He's been so sticky in coverage. He's getting his hand between on the football. Like, he's just everywhere right now.
I had him in my, if I'm not mistaken, I had him in my pre-training camp 53-man roster projection. I did.
Wow.
I did. Well, I like to take a flyer on an undrafted guy each year. So it's not, that's something I do before training camp. So it's not, but he was the one I took a flyer on. I just felt like the back end of that cornerback room, there's a spot to be had there, man. You know, I think it's Lassiter, it's Stingley, it's Jalen Smith, if he's healthy. And then I think it's a free-for-all after that at that position.
Yeah, why not Colin Wright?
Right.
Yeah, why not him? Because he's around the football, and when Petrie mentions you as unsolicited a standout guy, and so does Kamari Lassiter. Like, we asked him for underrated guys, but he mentioned Wright first.
Stingley called him a dog today.
And then Landry did a great job asking about him, and Stingley said, hey, he's a dog. And then D'Amico had nice things to say about him as well.
So. Yep. All right, fellas. Well, let's mention again, Landry not with us tonight just because of technical issues, but he will have a...
He said it like he passed.
As far as... Yeah, Landry no longer with us for tonight. Sorry, did I fool everybody? He's alive. He'll have his 10:30 stream tonight. He'll be alive by 10:30. So he'll have his 10:30 stream tonight. Cody, what do you have going on with Houston football?
We got the daily training camp recaps on the newsletter/website, and then on the YouTube, the four big takeaways that you have. So a little condensed version. You know, you get the long-term form here on and SNL and with you guys' show. So a little condensed time it in version on that. And SNL tomorrow, 10 a.m., Trent Brown interview. Going to be worth your time.
Drop on your YouTube channel, and Spanky's a week from Friday, not this coming Friday.
The 14th.
Okay. Yep, on the 14th in the afternoon out at Spanky's. Where is that again? Over in Bel Air, right?
It's over on Bel Air in Sharpstown.
There you go. Reggie, do you guys know who you're having on the show tomorrow yet? Off the field?
It's off day. It's off day, big dog.
Oh, you know yeah, I mean? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll get back to
it. You want me to come on? I'll just come on. I'll just
Why not? Yeah, no, for sure. We can do
Sean,
that.
Sean, fresh off his walk.
Fresh off my walk through the neighborhood, yeah.
I can say this. We were supposed to have Reed Blankenship today, but he had a little bit of a, you know, a little cold. So I have a strong feeling that Reed Blankenship, if he's not Friday, we'll get him here relatively soon.
Okay. He's a good interview. That'll be good. You guys had a great interview so far, by the way.
He's already ducking interviews. Good Lord.
I don't think he was ducking it. I think we just wanted to make sure that he was all the way fresh. But maybe he's ducking it. Maybe he looked over and he was like, I want them cats.
Did he look over and say, look, if the people want to hear from me, they can go to the Exciting Whites podcast.
He'd be smart to.
Cooper DeGene. Yeah.
What did you actually verbally hear him? Can you confirm that there was something wrong with his voice? He sound like Kane before he started talking normal.
I had to get a wrestling
reference in for Shawnee.
Thank you.
I did not hear from him. I like the conspiracy that you're weaving that he just tried to buy himself another day.
Sorry. It'll have to be next week.
Rest in peace, Undertaker.
Picture and Reed Blankenship pulling out those little things, got a little Texans logo on it. That's a new thing in the kitchen. We're trying to cater to everybody, including smokers. All right.
To be fair, Kane had that because his brother set him on fire, Sean.
That's true. Yeah, okay. No. They can be various reasons. Yeah. Good point, Cody. All right. I will see everybody tomorrow at 6 a.m. on Payne and Pendergast. Reggie, 10 a.m. on In the Loop. We're back in studio tomorrow because no practice tomorrow for the Texans. You heard where you can find Cody here until we've got another Texans practice. So, gentlemen, enjoyed it as always. And we will see you guys out at practice. And we will see all of our viewers and listeners here on Monday. We do it Monday and Wednesday, 6 p.m. now and through the entire season here on the Texans Collective. Everybody have a great night. Cody? End stream.